discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Her family drove stolen cars, lived in stolen houses, and shopped with stolen credit cards. Visits from strange people trying to track down her father were regular occurrences, and his drug use created chaos. But from a youth filled with secrets, Candace Curry eventually found a place of forgiveness and freedom. As she struggled to understand her criminal father and her own imperfect life, Candace came to realize we don't have to be defined by our circumstances, but by how we respond to them. She's penned her fascinating story in the new book, The Con Man's Daughter, a story of lies, desperation, and finding God. And she joins us today on the road. The warmest of welcomes to you, Candace. It's a real treat to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited. I appreciate this.
This is just amazing. I mean, one of the arresting childhood images that you share is how at 13 years of age, you and your brother would be left alone at home for weeks at a time, existing on turkey meat and Pop-Tarts. Paint that picture for us as we begin. And when did you first start to realize, Candace, that your life may not be exactly what many would term normal?
Well, I think I was a little bit younger than 13, possibly like the beginning of middle school, so maybe 11, 12. We realized that our lives might be a little different. We had a lot of very close friends, and we knew that their dads got up in the morning and went to work and worked normal jobs, and ours was just kind of chaotic. I can say that I don't ever remember him getting up and going to work, like putting a suit and tie on or what have you, or, you know, his mechanic uniform, whatever it was. He didn't get up and do that. He was very elusive. I mean, he would just like go off and do whatever, and it wasn't kind of explained to us. We knew pretty early that we were different, that our family was different, but we just didn't know that it was like illegal. We didn't know that it was bad. We just thought he did something different. It wasn't until middle school, when we were left home alone, my parents split up in middle school, and we had chosen to go live with him because he painted this picture of this amazing home that he was moving into. It was six bedrooms and had a black bottom pool, just all the thrills of a great summer.
Sure.
And then my mom was moving into a one-bedroom apartment because my mom was a hard worker and did everything legally, and so that's what she could afford. We were, unbeknownst to us, moving into a stolen home, as crazy as that sounds.
Wow.
So we moved in with him, thinking it was going to be, you know, just swimming by the pool and all that kind of fun stuff. And then we woke up one morning and he was gone. And it wasn't a gone, like we thought something had happened to him. We knew he had left intentionally, and we didn't necessarily know when he was coming back. There was a large turkey, you know, kind of like a Thanksgiving turkey in the refrigerator that he must have cooked the day before, or maybe a couple days before that.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of Pop-Tarts, because we loved Pop-Tarts when we were little. And so he didn't come home for, you know, 10 to 14 days. I can't, like, nail a number down because I was 13 and we didn't, you know, we just didn't know.
Sure.
It had been almost 2 weeks that we were there together. And we didn't live near our friends because we had moved out of, like, our school district area. So it wasn't like we could walk to our friend's house. And we hung out. We pulled that turkey out, and we left it out all day. As gross as that is, I can't even believe we survived without some sort of food poisoning. But we would pick at that turkey, and we would eat Pop-Tarts all day, and we would swim together or watch movies in my dad's room. And we just kind of, like, bucked up, I guess. It's the only explanation I have. And and went through it together.
It's extraordinary. Just extraordinary. This, you say that you didn't miss him like normal kids is the phrase that you use after a while, but that you missed the normal things that a parent ought to provide. How does that look like through the eyes of a child?
Well, we didn't miss him. I mean, I think at this point we were kind of like disenchanted by him. Growing up, we just thought he was the most amazing thing ever. So we were angry at him. We didn't miss him the way like a child misses their dad when they go on a work vacation, you know, and they just can't wait for dad to get home.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we missed. What we missed was, hey, can you run me up to the store, or can you take me to my friend's house, or cook a dinner? You know, all those normalcies that I think we take, we don't take for granted in everyday life, but just are such a normal part of our routine every day that when they were gone, it was huge. You know, no one was there to cook dinner. And at 13 and 15, we weren't like, you know, making steaks and cooking great meals. We were literally picking off a turkey. So those are the things I missed. Rides to my friends' houses or, you know, taking us out to eat. Just the little things that you don't think about.
Yeah. That is the voice of Candace Curry. She's author of The Con Man's Daughter, her story of finding forgiveness and freedom out of a youth full of lies and desperation. You describe in this amazing way how people were after your dad all the time. There were folks looking for him to pay up, as you explained it, on his dues. Give us a sense, looking back now, to kind of flesh this out. I mean, what kind of crime was he involved with? What have you discovered looking back?
I honestly have no idea. I have no idea what he really... I know that it was always like embezzlement or financial things. It wasn't like physical crimes, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
It was always, you know, money laundering or legal document mishandling, stuff like that. So when a lot of it was money, he would steal money in sneaky ways. It's not like he would just go into somebody's wallet and take a 20. I mean, he would mess with their bank accounts. He would mess on a large scale with their lives financially. And so people would come to our doors and call. I mean, for years, we were afraid to answer the phone. I mean, well into my adulthood, I was afraid to answer the phone because I always had this fear that somebody was going to be screaming at me on the other end of the line because it was such a normal part of our lives. Or people showing up asking where he was. I worked at a restaurant in my 20s, and somehow a customer asked my last name, and when I said it, he immediately connected me to my father and just started going crazy and yelling and how he wanted to kill my dad and all kinds of stuff.
Oh my word. Well,
officially know in detail what he did, but I know that he financially ruined many, many people.
Yeah. Returning to that image of you and your brother when you're 13, poolside there, subsisting on the Pop-Tarts and the turkey, you described this pretty heart-wrenching moment from that season on one of these summer days with your dad gone when a policeman on patrol walks past your backyard, and you explain how that was actually pretty normal because you lived in this upscale, what is the word, phrase you used, that you were in the suburbs?
Sub-city. I mean, it was a city inside of our city, basically.
Right. So it wasn't abnormal at all to see the policeman, but you so badly want to just say something to him and explain how things are wrong, but something holds you back. What was that fear that kept you from saying something?
Well, we feared that we were going to get in trouble. The policeman walked the backyards quite often. It wasn't abnormal. It was just abnormal at that time because we were alone. And, you know, the policeman sees two teenagers swimming. It's not like he is going to go, where are your parents? Because we're teenagers, they could be inside or, you know,
right.
At that age, it's okay if you're outside swimming. But it was kind of a desperation of really wanting to go, hey, wait, we need you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was also the fear of, we thought we were going to be in trouble. We thought we were going to be in trouble because we were home alone, even though it wasn't our fault. We had just been trained that it was always our fault. He always put the blame on somebody else. And we didn't want my mom to find out because we didn't want to upset her. She was working very hard. If she would have known, she would have come and gotten us immediately. But we just didn't tell her because she had such a burden already, and she had the stress of my dad and keeping up with us and everything. We just kind of kept quiet. And my brother would have never said anything because he was harder. He was a little more bitter, and he's like, nope, don't need anybody's help. But I was desperate, like, save us, but we didn't say a thing.
That's kind of an amazing part of the story, too, that you take this almost the peace of your mom and her well-being as part of your own responsibility at that age. I mean, that was a pretty crushing responsibility to put on somebody.
Yeah, and she didn't put it on us at all. My mom's amazing, but my dad did. I think he always kind of like manipulated us to think that if we told, then mom was going to be devastated.
Sure.
Then we would hurt mom, and mom would be upset. You know, he always used her as his leverage against us so that we wouldn't tell what he was doing.
Man.
You know, oh, your mom will be devastated if you say anything. And so we didn't want to devastate mom, and so we just kept quiet or lied to her or whatever. He was extremely manipulative that way.
Yeah, master. You know, you've used that word desperation multiple times. It's the way you express your wish to have your father love you in the book and to pay attention to you. Such a normal thing. But how did that desperation shape the way that you began to view him as a person?
Well, it was a huge rejection on my part. I was so desperate for my dad. And when he didn't give me what normal dads give their children, you know, that I wasn't important, I started to realize, and it made me feel unworthy of a father's love, and it made me start to resent him. But even in my resentment, I would have done anything he asked just to please him and make him love me the way that I wanted to be loved. So even when I knew he was doing wrong, even when I knew, you know, that things were shady and that I shouldn't be doing it or whatever, I still did it because I wanted his approval so bad. And I just thought maybe this is going to be the time that he changes and values me and, you know, becomes my daddy instead of just this man that's like kind of taking care of us, sort of.
Yeah. Man. There's so many moments. There's so many emotions that you experience reading the book. There's laughter. There's kind of the whoa moment where your jaw drops, and then there's a lot of moments where you kind of just do experience those tears start to come to your face. Candace Curry is the author of The Con Man's Daughter, her story of finding forgiveness and freedom out of a youth full of lies and desperation. And speaking of those tear-jerking moments, I mean, you faced so many challenges, but perhaps the most emotional portion of the book describes how eventually circumstances led you to leave what you describe as the sad little girl behind and become what you describe also as an angry woman. And I can only imagine how difficult it must be to talk about that time. So feel free to share, you know, whatever you like about where you were at and describe that moment.
Well, at 16, my dad had his best friend forever until the day he died. But they were kind of in cahoots together. I think the man was very much like my father, and they did their deals together, and just they were like the perfect storm together, I guess. And my dad put this man in my life, and kind of he would have him come pick me up from school and take me to lunch, and for no reason whatsoever. And this man was much more my age than he was my father's, but he was still an adult, and I was still a child. And, I mean, it's a long story. You'd have to read it through the book, but the ending circumstances was this man sinned against me with sexual abuse. And my father knew about it. The man called my dad and told him the very next day. And so when I went to my father with it, knowing he knew that information, I honestly thought that he was going to, you know, be mad and go do what any normal dad was and I don't want to say beat him up, but, you know, shake up whoever hurt his daughter. Yeah. And instead, he told me, if you ever tell your mother, I'll make your life a living hell, was his response to it all. So even then, he was like, if you tell your mother, there's going to be consequences on you instead of where the consequences should have lied. And I think that changed me more so than the actual sin. I think my dad's response to it hardened me more and made me very angry for many, many years and made me build a huge wall and not trust anyone. And I think I truly intentionally destroyed every male relationship I had in my life very intentionally because of that.
Yeah. We've spent so much time expressing the reality of how bleak in many ways childhood was for you. And yet, as you read this book, there is joy in this book, there is triumph, and there is redemption in this book. How does that begin to unfold? How does God begin to enter this picture, Candace? And with this backdrop set, you move on to forming your own family in the story. And I understand that first attending church was more of a way to get a break from the kids, right?
Yes. Well, my cousin had signed my daughter up for the choir program at the church next to us that we had not attended. I was terrified of church. I was terrified of church people. I thought God was, you know, for the good people, not people like me.
Yeah.
And so my cousin signed her up and was taking her to the choir. And then my cousin moved farther away, and so I would have to take her. And I was like, oh, goodness, what's going to happen to this church when I walk in the doors? My daughter accepted Christ during that time at like 8 or 9 years old. And I knew that I had to continue to feed that for her. I didn't care about it for me, but I knew that I had to, you know, respect her and take her to church. And so I started to do that. But my husband was still adamant. We both grew up with tumultuous childhoods. And so we were both kind of hardened to church and God and everything. Yeah. And so he wouldn't go at all. I started taking the kids, and I would drop them off. And literally, I paint the picture of me like sitting in the foyer of the church, kind of like staring off into space, possibly some drool, just kind of like, oh my gosh, you know? And it's true. But, you know, the Holy Spirit works, and he started doing some work in me. And then my marriage crashed, and that's when he really got a hold of us. I think that he really changed our lives when that happened.
That is the voice of Candace Curry. The book is called The Con Man's Daughter, and it's her story of finding forgiveness and freedom out of a youth full of lies and desperation. So take us through that a little bit. I mean, the first few years of your marriage to your husband, Brandon, you express as being quite a challenge for a number of reasons. But as this story is sort of unfolding on parallel tracks, you have this spiritual story developing and then your story of your family as well. How did they begin to intersect and how did God start to heal you and reach into your heart as well as your marriage as well?
Well, in the time that I was sneaking off to church and hiding and letting my daughter, you know, live with Jesus, our marriage was crashing. We had triplets right after we were married, which triplets is a beast in itself. Infancy triplets is just crazy, and many marriages don't last through having triplets. Hmm. And then our daughter was diagnosed with autism, which is another hit, and marriages, you know, there's a high rate of divorce with special needs children. And so we originally had two incomes, and we were doing okay financially, but with triplets, I couldn't work. So we went down to a one-income family. And so in the midst of me kind of seeking out God unknowingly and having my daughter, all my daughters attending church, my home life was diminishing. And on Father's Day one year, we drove past the church, and I told my husband, at least I'm not making you go there. And he turned to me with dead eyes and just said, I will never step foot in that church. Hmm. And it was such a hard moment knowing that my children were never going to have a dad who focused on Jesus. Even though I was not a stellar Christian or anything like that, I was going to church on Sundays out of obedience to my daughter, not obedience to the Lord. So I was kind of a hypocrite. Well, I was a hypocrite. And then a couple weeks later, we decided to get a divorce. We were in our kitchen, and we decided to get a divorce. And I remember very clearly God telling me that if I'm going to choose to be a Christian and I'm going to show my daughters what Jesus looks like, then I don't get to bail on my marriage just because it got really hard. And this is the time that I need to show what true forgiveness and true love and true perseverance looks like and what it looks like when you let Jesus take control. And I just was so mad at God for saying those words to me instead of, run, go, you're free, you know, which is what I really wanted to hear.
Of course.
But he didn't. And so for the first time, I think I really obeyed God, and he started to work on our marriage. And that was on a Tuesday. On Sunday, my husband asked to attend church with us.
Wow.
In the very church he said he'd never step foot in. Yeah. And I said, don't go because of me. Please, you know, go because you want to go. And he said, I'm going because I want to go.
Wow.
And yes. And you know how the Holy Spirit does. I mean, we went into church that day, and it was as if the sermon was written just for us. So much so that when we got in the car, I said, I promise I did not tell them any part of our story. That is all God talking to us. And about 6 weeks after that, we were baptized together.
My
husband
word.
Accepted Christ, and we were baptized together, and our lives completely changed after that.
Wow.
And I'm not saying our lives became perfect, because, you know, that would be a lie. Our lives were just focused on Jesus, and we had a peace about everything.
The concept of forgiveness, really, I did find to be at the heart of this book. And you talk about forgiving so many people in your life, but take us through that process of forgiveness towards your dad and towards so many others who have wronged you throughout your life. I mean, forgiveness is a difficult concept for each of us, but there was perhaps more on the ledger for you than for many of us.
He really removed the need for me to hold on to sins, my sins, other people's sins. I had carried my dad's sins around forever. I just owned them because I thought I needed to. But the truth is, they were never my sins, none of them. Not the ones done to me, not the ones I did. Jesus took those for me. And so I had, knowing that Jesus had forgiven me for everything that I had done, I kind of had no right to hold on to any of the sins against me. And, I had to ask for forgiveness for many things, especially to my husband, you know, for things that I had done. So if I'm asking for forgiveness, then who am I not to forgive? And I want to say that forgiveness is pretty easy. And I know that sounds crazy, but the moment Jesus came into my life, it was really lifted from me.
Wow.
He just owned that for me in a way I can't even describe. And I forgave my father before he died. I did. I never spoke that to him, but in my heart I had forgiven him. And then his death really kind of freed me from everything.
Yeah. It's just an extraordinary story. Candace Curry is with us. Her book is called The Con Man's Daughter. It's a story of finding forgiveness and true freedom out of a youth full of lies and desperation. You say some amazing things throughout this book, Candace, but in my humble opinion, I don't know that anything is more amazing than this line. You say, quote, "None of our stories are pointless. None of us are a mistake. None of us are worthless. Every season of our life serves a purpose." I mean, your journey, it seems to me, and perhaps to many who read, could have ended with a very different lesson. How can you so joyfully say those words today?
Well, because of Jesus. I have no other explanation. Everything that is in the book, Jesus redeemed in the end of the book. Every little tiny piece of things that I had been devastated over, he made sweet in some way, shape, or form. Even his friend that sinned against me, and that is a hard place for people to forgive. But 20 years plus later, he redeemed it. He put the man in front of me and let me release that sin, and face to face tell him, "I forgive you."
Wow.
And go be a good dad and go do good things, you know? So the deepest, deepest hurts are redeemed. We just live on our time, and God has a different time frame than we do. So I think even in the hurts right now, I know that Jesus is going to take care of them and make them sweet somehow. So I try to, like, just not dwell and have peace in all the hard moments, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. It does make sense. Perhaps not in terms of the logic of our normal lives. That is real redemption right there. That's what it looks like. So in just a few moments that we have left, I mean, paint the picture a little bit of what your life looks like right now. I know in addition to the book, you have a really cool ministry through your blog as well.
Yeah, I started writing after my dad died, just kind of as my therapy, and it randomly grew, and I wrote a blog post called "An Open Letter to My Daughter's Stepmom" that got a little bit of attention due to the fact that blended families are kind of so predominant now and usually toxic, and this was a positive message. And so after that, it's just writing about what's on my heart and kind of the truth about our lives and what God does in our lives, and about being honest and raw with people so that people can know they're not alone is kind of my mission. And just truly to show redemption. My husband and I now live in my best friend's childhood home that I had my first sleepover here when I was 6. And I think that's so sweet that God did that for me, that he gave me my safe place that was my safe place growing up, and he gave it to me to raise my children in. I can't even think of something sweeter. And then the 6 months after we lived here, he opened up the house next door for my mother to live in. So we live next door to my mom, and my kids get to run back and forth from our houses, and I get to tell people about Jesus, which I all my life could not even, you could have not told me that was going to be what I was doing in life. It would have knocked me to the floor, you know, I was so afraid. And now I'm like so excited to share about Jesus and just how he loves us in our mess.
Wow. How about that? Candace Curry is author of The Con Man's Daughter, the story we've been talking about today on the road. And if people have been tuned into this story and just experiencing the same incredible sort of emotional journey just listening to it that I did reading it, where can they go and grab a copy of this book, Candace, and to find your blog as well?
My blog is at CandaceCurry.com, and you can go on my website and it'll say book, and it'll give you a bunch of links to buy the site. You can get on Amazon and buy it, go to Barnes & Nobles and get it, Books A Million. There's plenty of links on my website to go through, but you can always jump on Amazon or Barnes & Nobles, and it's in the bookstores now too, so you can actually physically go and get it.
Splendid. Well, what a treat to have you here today. Thank you so much for your heart and for your bravery telling this story. I know that it is impacting a lot of people.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.